but I'll just go through it quickly and provide you guys with some information we gathered. Conrado just gave you a little intro, so we'll skip that slide. But last week, staff created and disseminated a survey to our nonprofit organizations serving Coachella Valley residents. And we received a total of 48 respondents. We're really pleased with that rate of return on our survey because it was only open for a couple days because we wanted to prepare some information for you guys quickly. So we're very pleased with that. And we got a wide range of respondents from small to large organizations that I'll kind of break down and show you. We did ask a couple introductory questions asking about target populations. It was a select all that apply, as many of our organizations serve various populations. This is just the top 10 that we found. Number one was seniors, with 28 of the 48 respondents selecting that as one of their target populations, followed by youth, LGBTQ, individuals of chronic conditions, veterans. Number six was children, 0 to 5, followed by homeless, HIV/AIDS, clients with developmental disabilities, and also farm worker communities. There were several different ones that just received one vote, for example, the business community, college students, and high school students, and we even had one for animal welfare. We then asked what the primary organization focus was, and it was overwhelmingly human services. This again was a select all that apply because most of our organizations do, you know, a lot of different things, but number one was human services, followed by education, behavioral health and mental health, food services, recreation, housing, specialty care, and so forth. Again, there was a lot of single answers. They had the ability to say other and then add their own. And you can probably kind of see my note at the bottom that there was a lot of things that received one vote. For example, advocacy, water infrastructure, going back to business development, legal assistance. So we did receive a lot of variation in responses, not all that are aligned with the district's mission, but it was good to see, you know, the response and from all over the valley. We asked to kind of get a sense of the organization's operations and the revenue and how big they were. We asked what their annual operating revenue was. As you can see, over half of, or 20 of them, so almost half of them do have the smaller budget ranges annually of under 500,000, with about 8 having the larger budgets of over 5 million. So we did have a range there. And then we asked what their main sources of revenue were. And these little three graphs throw the first, second, and third main revenue sources. The first and second, you can see that grants plays a really important role, as well as fee for service. And one thing that we did want to point out was the importance of the special events and how much that does make up a lot of revenue for our nonprofits. And just understanding that so many of them, as we're, you know, very much aware, had to cancel big fundraising events, and a lot of them are trying to, you know, be creative to figure out how they're going to get that money back into their organization and trying to look at virtual things and whatnot, as it does make up a large portion of their revenue they bring in. Then we kind of moved into some more specific COVID questions, the general, you know, asking if they're operating, if they're open. During this time, over 80% said they were still operating. And then when asked which organizations, if they were open and providing COVID-specific services, about 75% said they were. There were other organizations that, although they're still remaining open, weren't necessarily providing COVID-specific resources. For example, YMCA of the Desert, they're trying to do virtual physical activities, but not necessarily target any COVID recovery services. Then we wanted to take a look at the economic impact. We asked the organizations to give us a sense of what percentage of their income has been impacted, and about a third of them fall in that orange range, and that's 41 to 60% of their income being impacted. So, you know, that's a significant portion. And then we kind of wanted to just dig a little bit deeper, had an open-ended question looking at the reasons for financial impact. A lot of us can guess some of these, just the overall depleting revenues, a lot of the food services were saying, you know, increased demand for services, just more people on the food line, more people looking to get some of those, connecting to those resources. Again, the big constant theme during this survey was the cancellation of these major fundraising events, the closing of resale stores for organizations such as Angel View and the other ones that operate those types of stores, a lot of different expenses related to cleaning, proper PPE, just to make sure not only the staff are safe, but any interactions with clients are as safe as possible. A lot of decreased individual donations. Some of the bigger offices had are missing all their room and facility rentals for events and conferences and meetings. So that was impacting them as well. As well as, you know, there's a lot of reduced volunteers. People are, you know, staying at home and following procedures and restrictions. So there are various reasons, and, you know, everyone's being impacted in some shape or form. We did have a question in there asking from the respondents if they have received any funding specific for COVID-19. And here's just a list. Not every organization did receive any funding. About just over 30% of those who responded, so that's about 15 organizations, had received no funding whatsoever for COVID specific. But some of the other organizations said they did, and they gave the funding source, and that was, you know, the federal government. There's a lot of our nonprofits that received the Small Business Administrative Payment Protection Program, so bringing money in that way. A HRSA grant fund, there was the Desert Healthcare District Emergency Response Fund and our collaborative fund with RAP, as well as the Inland Empire Funders Alliance, their collaborative grant for this rapid response. Some other various foundations, Riverside County, and like Nonprofits Insurance Alliance. We did ask for those who had a specific dollar amount, you know, what does that look like? And I totaled everything up, and it was just under $7 million. And this is, you know, definitely an underestimate, as some of them couldn't give dollar amounts. They're still waiting to get their confirmation for the payment protection program when they completed the survey. Not all the district funding was even included in this. I just only recorded what was documented on the survey. So it does show that there, you know, outside of district, there is a good chunk of money that is being brought into the valley. So that was just to provide that. We wanted to get a little sense of operational impact, those organizations that have had to lay off or furlough some of their employees. And we had, when asking what organizations had to, you know, go through and furlough some of their staff, 17 organizations, so just over a third, said they have had to. And we asked if they would share how many, and this is full-time and part-time employees, that they've had to, you know, furlough or lay off during this time. And there was a total of 581 employees that were, cut back hours during this time or let go for right now. And I do want to note that 42% of that 581 employees, so I think it was just under 250, was from one organization, and that had to deal with the resale stores. So I don't want to make that number misleading, but... And we did ask for those who have had to, you know, lay off some staff or furlough them during this time, what would they need to rehire those? And, you know, overwhelming, it was just funding. You know, people need that core operating support funding to get them back on their feet. Some just simply mentioned time, because they need to reopen their programs, revamp the programs to virtual as opposed to in-person, you know, back to a full patient capacity, the reopening of their stores, simply just the lifting of the shelter in place orders so they can get back into their office and do what they do best. And then there were a couple that mentioned they were looking to do some internal assessments to know how they can, that with program adaption and things like that, what are they going to have to move around with staffing, just to get a better idea and making sure the organization runs as smoothly as possible while keeping, you know, as many staff as they can on. And then we asked for those who were providing COVID-specific resources, you know, what do those look like? What are they primarily doing? A lot of it was the, you know, education resource connectivity. Food service is obviously huge with our food distributions and the senior centers doing the home delivery, some medical supply delivery, a lot of switching to telehealth, as well as even the recreational virtual activities. behavioral health counseling, making sure that's available, as so many people, you know, are isolated by themselves and, you know, experiencing depression or anxiety by having a routine disrupted. A lot of testing, direct testing, case management, advocacy, employment assistance, just lots of check-in phone calls with their clients, personal protective equipment, childcare for essential workers. There's quite the variety. I think a lot of it was, there are a lot more respondents with the resource connectivity, just getting them, people understand what's going on, you know, if they lost their job, where can they go, things like that, as well as the food services, but lots of different answers. We did ask about a little bit about sustainability, you know, how are they thinking they can recover from this? There are several organizations that said they're looking to revise their strategic plans, you know, how can they adapt certain goals and outcomes to still stay true to their mission and vision, but also know that these, you know, are different times right now. There's still a lot of uncertainty about what's to come. So seeing how they can revise there, the converting to virtual services, the telehealth, the recreational sports, a lot of that, reducing staffing of programs, services, if they're, you know, not appropriate for this time until we're back to normal, whenever that may be, implementing safety procedures. So when we do go into the reopening, making sure that, you know, staff are safe and any clients are also safe. Really being creative with the fundraising. A lot of people are swarming online trying to do things like that. So I had a lot of people say that being creative is really difficult right now because everyone's kind of going at this, they're using the same platform and they're not having those special events that they had before and they've had for a long time. Collaborating and building meaningful partnerships with different organizations that have similar missions and similar target populations, working together to make sure that population can be served best possible. There's even a couple that are, you know, they want to make sure that when and if a second wave comes, that they are prepared and their organization is prepared to react to it. A lot of the telehealth options, as I mentioned, multiple phase reopenings to, you know, not just full on open doors, you know, how best can they serve the community, but through a couple steps, and then really looking at outreach efforts and social distance learning. And lastly, we did ask if they could, you know, tell their funders anything about this time and funding for the future, what would they say? There's a lot about redirecting to core operating support versus programmatic support. Assisting in refining current operations, you know, what can they do now that they couldn't do before, and, you know, switching to that technology, which comes into the next bullet, which is provide technical support and infrastructure. Not all of them can adapt to a virtual services or know how to. One that was mentioned a couple times was budget assistance, looking at how to project a next year's budget with so much uncertainty, making sure that they're making the right steps and they're budgeting accordingly. Not only the core operating support, but unrestricted core operating support was mentioned. The continuing to disseminate safety procedures and resource connectivity, keeping up, you know, the district's webpage. There's a lot of resource pages out there now, CBHIP being one of them, and our resource page, so making sure those are, you know, they don't go away. Flexibility with reporting and funding. There was a couple that mentioned that COVID recovery is extremely important, but hoping that not all funders put, you know, all eggs in that basket. They still look at their other health priorities that may not fall under that. So those organizations that may not be doing COVID specific recovery are still able to, you know, run some of their services. Creating a funding resource hub to just share information to our organizations, knowing what funding is available and where. And also looking at short-term and long-term recovery funding. So not just what can we do now, but what can we start to look at so these organizations survive long-term. So that was kind of the result of the survey. That was a little quick. I can answer any questions before I transition it over to Conrado to look at the results of this survey and looking at funding recommendations for our next fiscal year.
Yeah, thank you, Megan. Before I turn it over to the directors to ask questions, I guess I'll ask the two public people, do you have any comments about this topic, Eva or Greg?
No, I've seen it before. Good report.
Yeah, it's the first time I've seen it, but I'm not really that surprised at the results of the, you know, what the organizations shared. So it'll be interesting to see how they'll move forward, and we all move forward as well.
Great. Okay, Arthur, why don't you start with any questions or comments you have? And Conrado, if you want to, is there anything that you want to say before you hear from the directors?
No.
Megan, I have two questions. They were really technical. Of the 31% of the agencies that did not get funding, did they not get funding that was denied, or did they not request funding? Question number one. And question number two is, which organization by name, if you know, laid off the 42.5% of its staff?
DAP.
What?
DAP, Desert AIDS Project.
No.
It was actually Angel View, because they have all their resale stores, so all those had to close down because of the...
Because they're not actually... Okay.
Yeah, so they had...
DAP closed their stores too, so I would have thought it would have been DAP, but I'm sorry.
Okay, and the agencies that didn't get funding didn't request it or got denied?
There were a little bit of a mixture of both. Some of them did apply but got denied because, you know, there's so much demand out there. And a lot, I did receive some comments saying a lot of the funding is for those people who are boots on the ground, COVID recovery. We had some research organizations that responded to our survey that said because they're simply just providing information, they didn't qualify for a lot of things. They did still try. And then there were some other organizations such as museums and the animal welfare that didn't get funding because they, you know, it's just not in the realm of where a lot of the funders are putting their dollars right now.
Thank you.
Letty?
I'm good, thank you.
I just have a couple comments. One is that it's interesting, and this sort of follows up on Arthur's question and Megan's response to my misinformation. It seems when an organization has to lay off people because a significant part of their fundraising is affected, like their resale stores or their fundraising department or, you know, whatever, it's different than when an organization has to lay off people because they're not able to provide the service anymore that they were doing before. Now, obviously, if they're not collecting revenue and they eventually have to lay off people delivering the service, that does affect the service. But at least in the case, I think, of both DAP and Angel View, a lot of their layoffs were of fundraising / retail store people rather than on their providers and social workers and people like that delivering the care.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any other information that tells me that I'm wrong in thinking that? No? Okay.
Les, how many of the people working at revivals are paid employees versus volunteers?
Well, they certainly have several paid people at DAP, and maybe that's the difference between Angel View and DAP, is that Revivals does rely a lot on volunteers.
Right.
Although they do have a number of paid people. I don't know how Angel View works. To be honest with you, I'm not even sure what Angel View does with the money they collect from their retail stores. It used to be for NeuroVitality, wasn't it? Didn't it used to have some association with NeuroVitality?
Angel View uses all their thrift store donations to run the 24 homes that they have for special kit, special needs.
So Angel View for special.
A lot of that goes to maintain those homes that are staffed 24/7 with nursing.
Okay, so I had no idea what Angel View did. I only know them as a retail store. Not on actually what service they provide.
And this all gets back to normal. Time for a road trip to go up to Miracleville and Desert Hot Springs and see what they do. They're a wonderful organization.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good point.
I have a comment to make. This is really good information. Thank you all the staff for putting this together, very timely. What is just glaring at me is the fact that we pretty much had shut down in mid-March, and we're in mid-May, so this is 2 months' time. Thankfully, many of the organizations that we fund were able to get their special events out of the way before, you know, the March. I think I was at an event like 2 days before the word came that they were shutting down. So to think that in 2 months' time, or less than a month actually, that we are at this point, and when we look towards the future, that even though some of the orders are going to be lifted, that there's not going to probably be special events for maybe for the rest of the year. It's going to be really cautious, and how can people plan on something without knowing what the climate is going to be? So coming out of this, you know, just trying to guess as to what is going to be the status of not having funding for a whole year, for these special events. You know, that percentage that you had on there for special events, I think it was like, I can't remember what it was, but 40% maybe. But that's a little scary to think that that if they don't have any special events, all of the organizations that were lucky to get their event in before, you know, the shutdown came. But that was just my comment.
And I actually think the bigger problem with, quote, special events is that, first of all, their donors, some of their donors may not have jobs, they may be stretching their dollars and not be able to give. But you have to remember that some of the big events that occur in the Coachella Valley are big extravaganzas with a lot of the money spent on putting on a show. And I do think that there are opportunities to fundraise, you know, like buy a ticket to a dinner that you don't have to come to kind of thing, and have that money go not to pay for the dinner and the room and the Broadway show that goes along with it. That's my bias, I'm sorry. But to actually go to the organization. So I do think that organizations are gonna have to rethink how they do fundraising. But yes, they will be affected because some of their donors just don't have the disposable income that they had before.
Yeah.
Conrado, did you wanna add anything? And what do you wanna do with this information next?
So this information was prepared to inform how.
You can share now, Conrado. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but so you can do the rest of the PowerPoint.
So we wanted to prepare this information to make it available to you so that we can have an informed conversation for how we're going to fund different organizations in the next fiscal year. Yesterday, we had our finance and administration and legal committee meeting, and there is a budget that will be presented to the board at the next board meeting. And that budget, as you know, it's divided into a component that it's our operating budget and the other component, which is our grant-making budget. We have an allocation for the grant making budget in our district for $4 million for the next fiscal year. This is probably the highest number that we have had in many, many years. And we want the funds to be used in a way that it's, number one, responsive to the needs of our community. Therefore, we wanted to take the pulse of our community, and to provide a transparent budgeted process for the board to be able to make recommendations on how those $4 million will be allocated. So we will be presenting to you on the next few slides what we see as a trend in other foundations, how they're funding. And also based on the reality of our organization, what we suggest should be the allocations. And finally, to guide this conversation, we also want to make sure that at the end of this process, we will be measuring outcomes, and that we as the district have a solid, a robust story to tell about the role of the district in our community, the value that the district brings into the Coachella Valley, and that all the board members have the opportunity to have a conversation about this, to provide their input, understanding that this is just the beginning of this process, and that as we prepare to release those funds to make them available through competitive mechanisms and more transparent mechanisms, that we have the opportunity to have this conversation about which outcomes we believe are important, that we pay attention to, and that we have this process of allocating resources based on the needs of the community and on the mission of the Desert Healthcare District. So I will now try to provide the other slides.
Conrado, before you show us that, can I just ask a question?
Sure.
Give us an idea of what the path is. You know, you're here presenting to the Strategic Planning Committee. Is it going to go to program and finance before it then comes to a study session and to the board? Or how do you see us getting from where we are today to finalizing the budget priorities? I'm not clear on that path.
So we presented the same information that you just saw, we presented to the program committee.
Okay.
Yesterday, we had a conversation with our finance and administration committee. So this is the strategic planning committee, and the recommendations for how we allocate resources should come from the strategic planning committee, because this is where we will define what is the role of the district and what should be the recommendations for the rest of the board of what should be the role of the district and how we're going to measure the outcomes of our funding in the Coachella Valley community. And as we will work on the release of the funds in the near future, I think that's when those details might be discussed in the program committee and ultimately on the board to create the mechanisms to release those funds.
So right now we're talking about buckets, you know, in other words, X number of dollars for homelessness, X number of dollars for mental health, X number of dollars for COVID related, whatever. So right now we're talking about buckets, not necessarily recipients of grants.
Absolutely.
Okay, got it, thanks.
So as we're talking about buckets, identifying those buckets, at some point, probably not today, but at some point when you talk about being able to evaluate our effectiveness, so that's where at that later date then is when we talk about what do we want to accomplish in those buckets. Is that what you're saying, or is that what we have to do today?
We will have that conversation. We will begin to have that conversation today. Okay. So do you all see the funding recommendations on your screen?
Yeah, you have to put the slideshow on, however that works. There we go.
Is it possible to put the slideshow a little bit to the left? Okay, there you go. Okay, good, thank you.
And you can make your window bigger, and that makes it bigger too.
New options, okay. I don't want to lose the pictures, but I want to see the PowerPoint. So, okay, sorry.
So what I recommend is that we go through the rest of the PowerPoint, and then we come back to the discussion about is this a good allocation? Is not a good allocation? So bear with me, please. So funding recommendations, district and foundation. So far, what we have been doing is following the strategic plan that expires on June 30th. And in this transition, we started working on the community health needs assessment and the health improvement plan which is going to guide future investments and allocations by the district. Therefore, the 2021, which is a transitional year, if you will, it's a year that it's somehow defined by the COVID-19 outbreak. And I believe it should be understood as a gap year funding to help recover our community from the COVID-19 public health crisis. First, I want to remind our board members of the health and safety code, which defines what a healthcare district is and what the healthcare district should and shouldn't do. And then we're going into what we have been funding so far. We have some examples of where district funds have been used. In the healthcare infrastructure, we had the Desert Hot Spring Health and Wellness Center, which was $5 million. The Cal State San Bernardino Health Science Building for $3 million. CVEP Health Innovation, $500,000. Health Career Pathways, $3 million, UCR Family Medicine Residency Program, $5 million. And I want to highlight that we have a roadmap work that it's still pending. It's part of the contract that we had with Kaufman Hall. I don't know if Kaufman Hall is going to complete that work, but it could be, it's something that we will be discussing in the very near future. On behavioral health, we have an allocation of $2 million. In homelessness, we have a collective fund that since 2016 has been allocated $3 million and $1 million in other projects. And vital services to people with chronic diseases that include seniors, developmentally disabled, etc. That's something that we did with the COVID-19. Moving forward for the fiscal year 2020-2021, that's the column on the right, we have $4 million in our grant making allocation. We suggest the following: healthcare infrastructure, that's $1.5 million. And the different components of that allocation would include corporate and support, telehealth, mobile medical services, access to care, community outreach, education, and health education and disease prevention. On behavioral health, access to behavioral health and mental health, we support an allocation of $500,000. In homelessness, we currently have about $700,000 remaining in that homelessness allocation. We suggest another $500,000 for a total of $1.2 million. And that would include conversations or potential funding for wraparound services, cooling centers, community outreach, and those things will be defined in the near future. Vital human services to people with chronic conditions, that will include all the people that are at risk of infection by COVID-19, and these are organizations that provide vital services to these different communities. In the economic protection and recovery and food security, this is something that we began to fund with Lift to Rise. We also have $400,000 that we allocated to find food bank. Moving forward in the 2021, we recommend an allocation of $500,000. And finally, we had some allocation for health promotion, education, and information. These items are part of the operating budget, therefore they don't require grant making allocations. So here are the outcomes that we have explored and that we want to provide to you as examples of what we could be using the funding for to measure what our funding is doing. In the healthcare infrastructure and healthcare services, what we present to you includes providing cooperating support for the healthcare related organizations, and the outcomes would be to increase access to healthcare for traditionally underserved populations, increase the number of mobile and portable medical units that we have in our district, and finally, increase capacity to serve patients through telehealth technology. On behavioral health,
we were also looking at this as short term, right, rather than long.
Yes, this is a 1 year funding. Therefore, the outcomes that we're trying to accomplish are short term outcomes. We know that the need is much larger than what you see right now, but we are working under the premise that this is a gap year and that we will be looking at long-term investments beginning with the fiscal year of 2021-2022. So on behavioral health, we want to explore how our funds from the Mental Health Services Act can be leveraged, especially since the county has some of this funding to maintain the number of mental health urgent care facilities or crisis stabilization units, increase telepsych capacity to increase access to mental health services, increase the number of educators that receive training and certification in mental health first aid, increase the number of college counselors to meet the standards that are required to colleges, and finally, increased number of peer mental health educators. The COVID-19 is going to have devastating consequences in behavioral and mental health. So we need to make sure that we are supporting this portfolio. On the homelessness front, we support the ongoing CVAC, CV Heart activities, including the cooling centers, case management, wraparound services, and community outreach. And finally, on the vital human services, people with chronic conditions, the outcomes that we are pursuing will be to maintain existing levels of services, support organizations undergoing mergers and acquisitions, and increase the number of case managers as additional services will be needed by these organizations. And when we talk about support organizations undergoing M&As, all these different crises undoubtedly end up with some organizations going belly up. And one way of preventing that from happening and making sure that the community doesn't lose access to a number of services that are provided by some organizations. Some foundations have in the past successfully supported mergers of nonprofit organizations. And this is something we want to keep in the back of our mind, that it's a possibility and it could be a way of supporting our community to maintain the ongoing services. On the economic protection, recovery, and food security, the outcomes would be support ongoing efforts by collaborative partners, promote community collaborations and regional work around this. And there is the concept of a caravan, for example, when Find Food Bank does one of their activities of food distribution, that there can be other services around that food distribution. So in one-stop shop, people can get access to their food, but they can also get access to Medicaid enrollment, guidance on an application for Medicaid or any other social services that may be pursuing. And increased case management at food pantries through measurable, I can't see what's behind that, through measurable food security, self-sufficiency, and quality of diet. Finally, I also want to bring attention to the fact that on the foundation side, we will have potentially $600,000 allocated. And the conversation that we had with the Finance and Administration Committee yesterday, it was decided that the grant-making budget of the district will be available district-wide, and we will walk away from the divisions of East versus West, and that when we have our funding, it's made open to organizations district-wide. Therefore, with the foundation, we will have $600,000 allocated for grant making, that it will eliminate that $300,000 fund that we have for Eastern Coachella Valley, and rather make this an allocation that could potentially be designated for a collective impact fund and to promote community collaboration and leveraging resources from other funders.
Two questions.
Oh, hold on a sec, Arthur. Are you done, Conrado?
So yes, this is the presentation.
Okay, then I think before we have the board ask questions and comments, we should see if the public has any comments that they would like to make. Greg?
Yeah, so, excuse me, under the homeless funding allocation, could that be utilized again as a match to the CVAG cities?
I don't see why not. I think that will be a decision that the board can make with the funding that will be available for homelessness.
Can you go back to the page, please?
So, is that the highest need, Greg?
Well, we get more bang for our buck that way. And then all of the things that Conrado has listed here outside of the cooling centers, and luckily this year, keep your fingers crossed, I think I'm able to get it all three covered from the county. But the case management, wraparound services, community outreach, outreach workers, in addition to it helps fund our crisis stabilization unit housing, our preventative measures that are gonna be even more critical. So my point there, Letty, is that our cities are very enticed when they get a match, and it just increases our purchasing power and the outreach of these, or the implementation of these programs so much better.
And Conrado, what was the dollar amount for homelessness? I don't remember.
So we currently have 700,000, give or take, and the proposed allocation is 500,000. So that will take it to 1.2 million.
Got it.
So I wanted to do, Conrado, I know you're not making these decisions now, these are board decisions, but just wanted to clarify that if we were to pitch that match, that would, it's been a long day, a sixth Zoom meeting today, that this would be eligible for that kind of pitch, for that collaborative match funding.
Yeah, it'd be up to the board, yes.
Okay.
What would be the amount, Greg?
Well, if we got all eight cities, or nine cities, sorry, it would be 900. Which would leave you an extra three for anything outside of that.
That's if you're asking 100,000 from each of them again.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Because it used to be 103, and then last year it was 100.
Yeah, the 103 was a formula when we were doing Roy's, so we just figured it was easier to do the 100. So we haven't heard from any cities that are not going to. A lot of them already have it as a budget line item, but we all know what city budgets are going to be. But and not to get in a huge argument and debate here, but I think you all know that if we can't walk away from homeless funding right now, because the potential for increased homelessness is great. So we need to make sure we not only keep what we have in place, but ideally, hopefully expand that as well.
So to open for discussion, would this be still unrestricted, or could it could actually be restricted? I mean, if you're thinking like Lift to Rise isn't trying to increase their fund for rental assistance so people don't become homeless.
Donna, if I can interrupt, I really think that that's a discussion that needs to happen. We're talking about the bucket now, and I understand what you're saying, and that has to be in front of the whole board, going through the program committee, decisions like that. I don't think that is the strategic planning committee to decide how homeless funds are going to be allocated. I mean, so let me just stop that for a minute. Greg, did you have any other point before I
move? No, that's it. Thank you, Les.
Eva, did you have any comments?
Well, you know, of course, Greg's the expert on the homeless, so I won't address that. But I think it is important, as was shown there, that to help organizations for the short term and long term, both areas there, but also in the different ways that strategically working with organizations to see how there can be mergers or greater collaboration and partnering, because I think we're all aware that there's a lot of duplication of services, and I think this is an opportunity to revisit all of that and to really help them take another look and see how they can work differently with one another and for improving services for the community at large.
Thank you. Arthur.
I have two questions, Corrado. One's just a technical question. Can you tell me what wraparound services are?
So
I don't understand the term.
Yes, wraparound services would be case management of different needs that a client can have.
I see. Okay, thank you. My real question really has to do with telehealth for the underserved. Telehealth requires access to a computer and an interactive capability, and I would believe that there's got to be some lack of capacity in the underserved community. So the question is, are the agencies that are dealing with the underserved community, do they have, for lack of a better term, a communal location that somebody who doesn't have access to telemedicine mechanical equipment can come to engage in telehealth services?
Well, that is exactly what we believe they may need help with.
Okay.
If we can provide the funding, they could come up with creative ways of making access to healthcare through telehealth to their clients.
Right. So they may need to have sites that people can come to, and then on a personal level, interact with a healthcare provider.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
If I could just address that for a second. A lot of times a clinic, you know, may not have certain specialties, and a patient may come in that needs a certain specialty. By having a telehealth capability or video conference capability in that facility, they can then consult with a doctor or a provider that's somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're talking about giving video monitors.
No, that's the point. That's exactly the point. I'm talking about not access between a specialist and a subspecialist. I'm talking about the interface between an individual who is underserved, who needs basic care and or specialty care, that he can come to a location and get into the system using telehealth.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Today I actually did telehealth with someone, and it's just simple. It's almost like a FaceTime. She couldn't video, so she just called me on the phone. It was just FaceTime.
Right.
If the underserved population have access to a phone, you know, a smartphone with the internet.
Yeah. Now, I've actually had a dermatology consult with my camera to demonstrate the location to the dermatologist that he needed to diagnose. So it's simple on the one hand, but you still need to have a computer interface. And I was just concerned about making sure that the people who don't have the who are underserved are more than likely not to have that capability. So, okay, thank you very much for clarification.
Letty?
Okay, let me go back to my notes here. The slide where it talked about, okay, this one actually, perfect. The one that you were just in vital human services. No, right there. And I understand that this is short term. I understand that that we are kind of having to be reactive here, but I don't think that number one would serve us well in just existing level of services. And I know this is nitpicky, but when we are now entering into this new normal, we have a lot more people that are not used to relying on services, that are dealing with a lot of new levels of anxiety and levels of not being able to feed their kids. So I don't think it's enough that we're going to be able to maintain existing level of services. Of course, we don't have the resources to be able to address all of the new level of services, but I think that we have to be conscious of the fact that we have to look out at how to reach out to the people that normally have not been in these kinds of conditions in the past. So maintaining the existing level of services, it might be maintaining a level of, or actually to address the highest need or a certain level of, I just think that that's one area that we need to kind of be conscious of. It's not just existing level of services. Many of our providers, like Fine, are now increasing the number of people that they have to feed. So it's not maintaining level of services. So that was my one thing so far. Okay, next.
And Letty, one question. How do you suggest that we measure that? What outcome should we use?
So let's see. Being able to increase, I think it has to be increasing the level of services that we provide. I don't think it's maintaining. I think it's increasing the basic needs services.
So should we call that increased capacity to serve a higher demand?
Yes. Better.
Okay,
so if there's, let's see, next one is, I don't know where I picked this up, if it was a previous slide, but I'm wondering about our immigrant population and some of the issues that they're dealing with in terms of not being able to support themselves and but still living with low wages or very unreliable wages and dealing with substandard housing and dealing with inadequate medical care. This is an East Valley issue. I know we have immigrants throughout our district, but I'm wondering how, any ideas on how we can reach out to do better on being able to address some of the needs of this population.
So one idea there, Letty, on the foundation side, since we're going to use that, our suggestion is that we use the funding available on the foundation side to be a collective impact fund. That way we can attract or foster collaborations with other funders. That could be a conversation we could have with grant makers concerned with immigrants and refugees to identify which organization could provide legal assistance to, for example, it's one service that I know immigrants and refugees need. And we know that our communities in Eastern Coachella Valley many times feel unprotected because they don't know the rights and they don't know the law and they don't have anyone who can effectively defend the rights. So is that something that you would consider as an opportunity to provide a solution?
Well, I was thinking more traditionally of people that are hesitant to access services because of the fear of losing the opportunity later on to get their legal status, or the fear of being somehow targeted. So that's what I was thinking of, is having an extra effort to be able to address the healthcare needs and some of the environmental issues. Like, for example, I think Pueblo Unido was one of the ones that was interviewed here. And when we have funded them in the past, being able to address some of the water quality issues that they've had. So I think that the specific East Valley issues of the air, I know we're going to do air quality under the special fund that we have, but I do think that we have to identify immigrant population as an area that we have to make a certain effort to be able to understand what are the areas that we need to be not ignoring or not forgetting about during this time, because these conditions will not only continue but get worse in this next year.
So will that be a conversation we should have once we start defining eligibility for funding from the foundation side?
Yes, I think okay. So.
Excellent.
Okay, and the other area that I was thinking, I think, I'm being very cautious about how I present this because I don't want it to appear like if I have a conflict, but I want to just throw out there that this has been mentioned in the past, and Eva kind of addressed it, about the fact that some organizations are going to have to merge to be able to survive, and how, and looking at how you deal with the new environment of revenue, generating revenue when you have absence of a special event. So strengthening organizations, capacity building, I think that's something that we should think about. How do we partner with a certain organization in the Valley that is already doing this? Because when I was on the program committee, many of the organizations that were coming in, this was brought up as a weakness in several of the organizations. And this is something that I believe that we have to, even more in this environment, is be cognizant of the fact that they may need it even more so now.
So. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's absolutely. It for me.
And Leti, many years ago, during the financial crisis of the 2008-2009, I believe it was in 2011 or 12, there was a convening, actually it was a series of convenings in Los Angeles of the largest foundations there, mm-hmm. the endowment, the Weingart
Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it was convened by the Southern California Grant Makers. And they brought together the nonprofit communities into a room, and they had presentations about economic data. And at the end, they were saying, all these were saying, because there is not enough money in the foundation world to support all the nonprofits that exist in LA County. So we want to invite you to start conversation among yourselves about how you can reduce the cost of doing your services, avoid duplication of services, talk about mergers and acquisitions. And actually they open up a fund to facilitate those mergers and acquisitions.
Yes, I do remember the effort, and that was a little bit more successful on the West End than in the East End, because I think there's this mentality that that the Coachella Valley has different needs, and that once you pass you know, the Beaumont Banning area, that we're not part of the Inland Empire, even though technically we are. So I just think that it's always been that case, that that it's difficult to initiate some of these programs on the West End. If you have a partner that's already local, that's already you know, working on the same issues, I think we should partner with that type of effort.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have just a couple thoughts. They're a little bit stream of consciousness, so forgive me if they're not too collected. First of all, I want to remind us that the healthcare district doesn't provide any services, that we're supporting organizations out there that provide the service. So a few of the slides talk about us increasing services, but we do it through other organizations, and we need to remember that. I like the idea of saying that and I think this is where the maintain existing level of services. I would modify that by saying we want to maintain the existing level of services that need to be there, that have been impacted by COVID-19, so that if there was something we identified as necessary and there's a risk of it not being able to be delivered because of the funding issues associated with COVID-19 with these various organizations that we work with, I think that there is a role for the district there. On the other hand, I also know that there is a lot of duplication out there, and not all of these organizations will survive, and maybe some of them shouldn't survive. And we need to, however, I'm not sure if it's our role or other organizations' role, but I think we have to be open to the fact that some won't survive and not prop up an organization that is not really meeting the need and or is providing duplicative services, et cetera, et cetera. So those were the main things. I like the buckets. I think that the amounts of money are generally okay. I'm okay with the whole idea that we stop talking at East and West Valley. But I do believe that Conrado and staff, you need to help the directors with talking points, especially those of us who are up for election this year, because those will be questions that will be asked. And I mean, I've already been thinking about how I address that, but I do think it would be nice if we all had a collective wisdom about why the Coachella Valley is stronger, that people are healthier if we address healthcare across the valley rather than segregate East and West. I do worry sometimes, and Letty, you sort of brought this up in my mind, that we have to be careful that we don't get out of the mission of the healthcare district. And so when you bring up legal services, for example, it kind of raised a red flag. Now, on the other hand, I understand that helping people access medical services in light of legal issues they might have, that kind of gets around it. But I think we need to be very careful that we're focusing on healthcare, social determinants of health, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, yes, we're gonna get into housing and water and things like that, but we need to always be connecting it to health or the social determinants of health. But otherwise, I think it's a good start and good job.
Thank you.
Any other comments from staff or any of the other directors, questions?
Well, the presentation that Megan gave earlier, is that gonna be shared at the board, or I already counted that we have six of the seven that have already seen it. If you include the program committee and then us, I think Mark may have been the only one that may not have seen it, unless you had some absentees. But is it going to be presented again, or is that just background information?
I look to you, Leti, for guidance on that. If you want, we can do a PowerPoint presentation at the board meeting. I think it will be an opportunity for the community to provide input.
I really think it's educational. It shows the importance of nonprofits and addressing our issues today. So if it's okay with my fellow board members to have you sit through it again, I think it's a very informative, and it maybe the second go around something else pops up questions, but I would like to have it at the board meeting.
My only suggestion, and Megan, this I hadn't seen it before, so I really appreciated your going through it and the speed with which you went through it. But I think at the board meeting, it would be nice if the document was provided ahead of time to the public and to the board, and that the presentation was a little shorter with more time for questions and comments, I think. That's my own personal view. I think when we get documents ahead of time, then the presentations don't need to be so long.
Excellent. And the other point is, since you are in agreement with the bucket's recommendation, that Chris, and this is something that we discussed in the F&A committee yesterday, we can fill in the blanks that we had in the budget of those five buckets to include the amounts for this.
Yeah, as long as the board agrees with it, sure.
Yep.
Well, and that $600,000 for the foundation, oh, that was my other question. If the money is already dedicated or allocated to the foundation, and once it's in the foundation, you have more flexibility with it, right? You don't have to be held to the same requirements as that AB 2019. Is that what that is?
That is correct, and so that's why we think that it will be an opportunity to do a collective impact with that money, so that we can have conversation with other funders and try to leverage one another to support some efforts.
Well, that part, but also what I would like you to think about if somebody were to ask you what kind of things would go in that, and besides saying collective impact, if there's a specific area, like maybe the immigrant population, that that we say, you know, we have knowledge that there's this specific area that we need to have an organization go out there and do weekend checks with the population in the mobile home park community, and therefore we need an organization to be able to do that. So then if we have flexibility to then go to like a Clinicas or Borrego or VIM and say, can you do this? So kind of doing an RFQ or rather than an RFP, right?
Sure.
Okay, so I like that idea for that fund. If we can think about that. So when we know that there's a specific need, and we know that there's specific partners that we can save some time and not have to do the process, the normal process, that when we can't even call an organization to ask them, what do you think of this problem? Do you have a possible solution? I like yep. that.
Well, I mean, I have a little different take on it, though. I think that the value is that we can go to other funders. You're talking about going to people that want our funds.
Yes.
And rather than being able to go to funders and say, look, we have a special project out in the East Valley that we want to do X, Y, and Z, and we have some money, but it's not enough, and we'd like you to add to that, and we can do it through the foundation.
Well, I think we can do both.
Yeah, but you do have to be careful about how you, the board still has to approve the—
Well, yes, it's still gonna go through the process.
With the other organization.
Yes, and I would not circumvent that process. I was just thinking that if we have that flexibility where staff recognizes that there's a problem area, and the board, and they propose a project for the board to consider, and we say, you know, we want you to go ahead and do this. We'll allocate $50,000 for this special, project. And then staff already has identified an organization or organizations, more than one, that can do it. Then kind of going back to the way the district used to be able to fund or to fund a project, to be able to identify who is the right partner to lead us through this, instead of waiting for a whole bunch of organizations that maybe not even have a clue what we want, but having to go through that exercise when we can identify.
I want to hear from council, because I'm not exactly sure that foundation money, the rules of AB whatever, how they're different between district money and foundation money. Yes. I'm not sure. You may be right, but
I don't know.
I want to hear from council.
I don't know. So please check, because if we have that flexibility, because it's now foundation money, then district, then I want to think about how we can actually be more of a driver, right, rather than just a funder.
See, I think we still have opportunities of being a driver. I think that we can't have discussions with people without it being public.
See, that's what I like. I like the...
we're already doing that now with Conrado, with Concord, and the Public Health Institute, and the air quality, and working with UCR. And so we've joined like a collaborative with that, and we've got some of the Avery dollars in there. So, I mean, it's not like we're not doing it currently.
But Donna, if you identified an organization out there that was doing good work, and you thought there were opportunities for the board to help fund because it meets our strategic priorities, et cetera, you mean you can't go talk to them and help them prepare a request that comes to the board?
Not right now, not with AB 2019.
I think we need to get some council clarification.
It's soliciting again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what let's get some council.
I'm fine.
So we can, if we are able to do that, and I see this as a great opportunity, but if we can't do it, then obviously we adhere to the restrictions and the new guidelines.
Yep.
Okay, maybe Conrado, you can help educate me or have Jeff educate me and the rest of the board to clarify this, because so far it's, we have to have some examples, not just the law in front of us.
Yeah, and we had actually talked about having that discussion we were informed that we didn't give as much funding out as a district has given in previous years because of this new change in AB 2019. So it is we're not as much of a driver as Donna used to be able to contact organizations and say, hey, did you know that we have an RFP that you don't want to, you might actually be able to fit this or do this well, and you need to apply. You can't even do that now. So.
Well, I think RFP would be different, Letty, than actually, calling up Allianz and saying, hey, we've got money specific for Census 2020. Why don't you apply?
Okay.
It's more, they would need to be proactive, and it can all start with an LOI. But, to give you a good example, if we created the initiative like we did with the California Endowment and enrolling for ACA and Medi-Cal, we put that out there. And then we actually, handpicked the organizations that were going to do the work.
I thought that was pre-2019.
AB 2019.
We need to have a discussion on this, because I'm confused now. And, again, my understanding was people and organizations would come to directors and say, can I get some money from the district to do X, Y, or Z? And that was the problem that AB whatever was trying to get around.
That was the whole backbone premise of AB 2019, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe we're reading more into that law, but we need counsel to help us with that, because I'm not a lawyer. I play one on TV, but I'm not a lawyer.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right. Is there another topic, Conrado?
No, I think this is it.
Okay. Anybody have any final comments or thoughts or closing prayers? No, not closing prayers. Anybody want to sing the Star Spangled Banner like they did at the Board of Supervisors meeting last week?
Conrado, I hope we only have one gap year. All things equal. Hopefully one gap year.
So this were all information. So was the Strategic Planning Committee, were they going to bring back a recommendation to the board to approve these bucket allocations, even though we don't have action on there? Is that something, a next step that you would like to see?
No, I think we're just giving, as the other two committees did, blessing to Conrado and staff to bring this to the board in the format that he's sort of done it before.
And the form of
so
the
this
budget.
Will fill the blanks of the budget form.
I
the allocation share, of the $4 million.
I want to share one anecdote though, because I think it highlights the danger of COVID-19 planning. I was on a call yesterday with an organization who was talking about they're not going to have a community multi-purpose room because they don't think over the next 2, 3, 4 years, people will be able to meet in the same room. And I want us to caution organizations to not think about, I mean, they can think about what it might be, but to make concrete plans about what we will and won't be able to do a year from now is hopeless. If we look back just 3 months ago, when we were saying masks weren't really important, you know, things change. And I think we need to encourage the organizations not to go off the deep end when it's about COVID-19 planning. That's my two cents.
Oh, one other thing, you just reminded me something of something that's, if, knock on wood, we are able to get a vaccine at the beginning of next year, I would like us to think about how we could make that more available to the places that probably wouldn't be able to get them, like the immigrant population. So,
absolutely.
FYI. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. If there's no other items, then I'll adjourn the meeting. And thank you very much. It's a 90-minute meeting. So thank you.
Thank you. Everybody.
Alejandro, where are you at? You're at home?